Here we go. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Black Talk, or welcome back to Black Talk, as the case may be. My name is Michelle Simpson, and just by way of introducing the show to those of you who may be new to Black Talk is a co-creation of the Boulder County NAACP and KGNU. KGNU, which reaches Boulder, Denver, as well as Fort Collins. And so today's episode of Black Talk features three Black Boulder County elected officials. And those elected officials are Tim Barnes. Tim Barnes is the Lafayette counselor, so from the city of Lafayette. And Tim, if I got this right, and you can correct me if I go astray here, your committees on the council are Cultural Arts Commission, the Library Board, and Consortium of Cities. You're an alternate there. And am I missing something? I think Dr. No, that's Cog. Right. Maybe Dr. Cog.
Oh,
an
right.
Alternative there as well. Okay.
Yeah.
And then we also have Junie Joseph. And Junie is the former Boulder Mayor Pro Tem, current Boulder City Council member. And we also have Shakita Yarbrough. And Shakita is newly elected Longmont City Council at large member. And I'm going to back up. So, Junie, did I miss anything in terms of committees or other, again, affiliations?
Well, I'm part of so many different committees at the city. I think it would take a long time to just talk about them, but I'm involved in the Financial Strategy Committee. And I think some of my favorite engagement on city council is representing the city, whether it's regionally or nationally.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And Shakita, you're newly elected, so I don't know how that looks for Longmont. Do they also have that committee structure?
Yeah, so I am on the Transportation Advisory Board, the Housing and Human Service Advisory Board, and Downtown Longmont Board.
Okay. And just to give folks a little background and a little context for the three of you, Tim, you have 2 years left on your term, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Junie, again, 2 years. And Shakita, you're newly elected, so you have a four-year term ahead of you. So I wanted to start just by giving folks just an overview and trying to place you on the landscape of Black local elected officials. So research indicates that approximately 89% of elected office holders nationwide are white. So when we look locally at locally elected officials, nearly a third of America's top 100 cities is governed by a Black mayor. So I think that comes out to something like 130 cities that are governed by a Black mayor. And several of those mayors are Black women. And it's lovely to have two Black women here with us today. So recent years have seen a real increase in the number of Black people elected to political office in cities and municipalities. And I think we'd all agree, not enough, but more. And more Black people elected to political office in cities and municipalities where the majority of their constituents, and this is true for all of you, where the majority of their constituents are not Black. So let's pretend for a moment that you had to run in an area where the majority of your constituents were Black. So we're just kind of imagining, okay? Would you have approached your campaign differently? Tim, you're looking very thoughtful, so I'm going to start with you.
My campaign was based on the data that were available on which individuals were most likely to vote. I think that would be the same way that I would approach the campaign in a community that was mostly Black, but I don't know that because I don't know if the same data would reflect what's possible. If there's a candidate who may have a greater appeal in voting, maybe there are people that haven't voted that would vote if, you know, or to knock on every single door. Mm-hmm. Instead of on what statistically
said, okay.
was okay. possible.
Okay, no, thank you for that. Junie, would you have felt as inspired to run? So in other words, if you were in an area that was predominantly Black, would you have felt as inspired to run? And by that, I mean, would you have felt the necessity to put yourself out there in this public role in the way that you have in the city of Boulder?
This question is very nuanced, right? Because again, Boulder is a very white and very wealthy city. And if we were to say Boulder was a very Black and wealthy city, and I would say, yes, I would still run. And I would probably still run on the same issues, because what I see here in Boulder, it's a class issue as opposed to a race issue. Mm-hmm. It would still, if it was a wealthy Black community, probably would still exclude poor Black people. So mm-hmm. in a way, I think my campaign would probably be similar, because when I was running for city council, what I hoped to do on council was to be empowered to represent the marginalized, the working class people, people who don't have a voice on Tuesday night because they're working two jobs, or because they don't speak English, or for other reasons, and they can't participate. So my hope was to engage the system in a way that include these type of folks. So in a way, I don't think my campaign would have been different if I were in a Black city, if that city was a wealthy city. But of course, as a member of, as a city council member, as I mentioned to you earlier, I represent the city on the national stage as well, being part of the National League of Cities. I'm part of the NBC LEO, which is the National Black Caucus of Locally Elected Officials. And I'm part of these discussions where I learn from my other colleagues what's going on in their communities. And I can see, yes, some of the challenges they face are dissimilar to the challenges that I face in Boulder, because it's a white community. So in essence, what I'm saying is that, again, if I were in a different city, in some ways I would be faced with different challenges. For instance, police brutality. It looks very differently in Boulder than it looks in predominantly Black communities. And when you talk also about, incarceration and the jail population system, it looks very, very different, because Boulder is predominantly white. The policing system works differently here. So yeah, it would be a very, very different campaign in that particular aspect.
Okay, no, well, thank you. So Shakita, would the issues, again, the same scenario, would the issues that you prioritized have been different?
No.
Okay. And so what were the issues that you did prioritize in your campaign?
Transportation, of course, affordable and workforce housing, and implementing youth in our government.
Okay, no, thank you for that. So as members of your respective city councils, you do a lot. You prepare for, you attend regular meetings, special meetings, executive sessions, working sessions. You meet and you talk with your constituents. You meet with other council members. Together individually, you answer emails and other social media posts from committee members or community members. You answer emails and social media posts of city staff and other council members. You talk to the media. You attend public events and gatherings in your official capacity. You meet with city staff. You attend city events. You draft proposals, many of you, for resolutions and ordinances. You meet with other public entities like law enforcement. You attend trainings and educational meetings and courses. So what is the commitment? And I'm saying all of that, not that I captured everything, but it's a lot, because after I read the list, I thought, okay, time for a nap. I mean, that's quite a commitment. And that commitment might, for some who are hearing us, seem daunting. And it might be daunting for those who've considered public service, those who've considered running for this office. So what would you say your average commitment is in terms of hours per week?
I will let Tim and Junie, answer that, since I'm new to it. I mean, I spent 8 hours yesterday. So just one day was 8 hours doing city council stuff. So
do you mind telling us what you were doing?
Appointing people to the city, interviewing people for the city boards. And that was from, So, that's one day, just that alone.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll jump in. Mm-hmm. So The commitment for city council, I would have to say, there is the emotional and physical commitment. And I think as Shakita just mentioned, some days I might work closer to what looked like an 8-hour shift, but other times I don't. But the emotional commitment of being on council is 24/7, because you'll get, you know, anything that happened in the city, I get texts from the city manager where she say, hey, this is going on and we are watching it. We'll let you know what's going on, you know, whether it's a wildfire or something going on in the community. We have to be aware of that. I get emails from community members and they'll say, you know, I want to meet with you. And Boulder is a very engaged community. Just yesterday, I had one community member who reached out to me about an issue that was going through council. And we received hundreds of emails, and I was caught up in part of that emails as well. People were just messaging me directly. And a couple of days later, the same community member said, hey, I messaged you and I haven't heard from you. And I had to apologize and say, hey, I'm sorry about that. I was trying to catch up with all my messages, but now I'm getting back to you. I wish I could have gotten back to you sooner. So in Boulder, people are very engaged. They want to meet you for coffee. They want to have lunch with you. They want to ask you issues about housing, policing, and all the different issues that is going on council. So I have to make time for that. Also, I work. I have a full-time job currently, and I just started that job. And I have to say, it takes away from doing the council work, which is an issue that we have in our community when it comes to equity, because being a council member, we don't get paid to be on council. We get a stipend, which is less than, it's somewhere between 10,000 and 11,000. It's so little that I don't even know how much it is. So in a way, to say to you, the commitment is a lot. It's financially straining, it's emotionally straining, but it's also fulfilling because you're serving your fellow community members, you're serving your neighbors. So to me, it's a full-time job. It's, if you wanna be effective at being a council member, it's more than 40 hours a week.
Okay, no, thank you. How about you, Tim?
Everything that Junie has said, on a smaller scale, that's where I am in Lafayette, because we have a third of the population. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges, though, is that we are connected regionally, mm-hmm, with the other population. So there are the challenges of understanding what's within my or our purview to prioritize, because this is something maybe impacting the cities around us, but then I have to work out, is this something to bring in front of the other council members or the city manager? Because we may be able to do something, we may not. And that's where it's very helpful to have our city attorney to help guide what happens here. Mm-hmm. And as Junie said, it's 24 hours a day, because you wake up in the morning, you look at email or you get a text and you think, oh, okay, it's time to start working. And so the interesting full-time aspect of it is not what you might think. It's not like, oh, I'm going to read the agenda or I'm going to work on this proposal. It's like, yeah, that's a piece of it. Mm-hmm. And then someone stops you, you know, on the street, which is what we're all at large. So anybody can stop me and say like, hey, I have a question. Are you in council? Blah, blah, blah. So mm-hmm, all of a sudden you're working.
Got it. Listen, Junie, in a guest opinion, you wrote in November of 2020 for the Daily Camera, you said that, quote, to that end, in my position as a council member, I might not get it right every time, but I stand behind the decisions I have made thus far, learning from each decision. So can you recall a decision you've made that you look back on now and believe you would have done something differently?
Wow. I mean, you're asking me to talk about regrets, right? And I think that's something that put all of us in a vulnerable place. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. To think quickly about a decision that I've made that I would say, if I could go back in time, that I would change is, for instance, when I ran for council, actually, I ran on, you know, this idea that I want to protect people and, you know, my fellow community members, and I want to, how do I put it? I want to stand on my record. I want to do the things that I set out to do as, you know, as part of my campaign slogan or my campaign, the stuff that I said I would do in my campaign. And this year I was not able to vote on annexation. I actually voted many times. You know, as you know, council is a process. Right. One issue can get voted on so many different times. You vote and vote on and vote until, you know, whatever is going on is resolved or you see the project to fruition. So annexation of the CU South project in Boulder, I ran on that. I said, you know, I want to protect people who live in Boulder. And I did vote yes. As the issues came before council, I voted yes. But in August, I was not able to vote. And part of the reasons why I was not able to vote was because I did a speaking engagement at the university and I did get paid for it. And part of it, I was thinking, you know, I want to do more public engagement. And that came back where there could be a conflict if I voted. Mm-hmm. And a lot of community members were upset with me because they thought that was a cop out. And I spoke to the, you know, to the city attorney, and it felt that it was the right thing to do. But if I could go back in time, I would have just not engaged into speaking at CU, or, you know, I could have changed that, but that's water under the bridge as of right now. But I did feel disappointed because people were waiting for me to make that vote, because that's why they voted for me. So I was disappointed in myself as well. And I did hear the disappointment from community members. So if there's something I would change, I think that would be that, so that I can put in my yes vote, even though, by the way, the annexation was successful. It was 6-2, I believe, and I was, or 6-1. Mm-hmm. I abstained and Bob abstained for his own reasons. But I think people in the community, for, you know, and I understand that as a voter as well, that they had the expectation, even if it would have been 9-0, they expected you to vote. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about the fact that, yes, the vote is going through, but they wanted Junie. They wanted that Junie vote because Junie ran on this idea that she would support annexation. And here's the moment. And she didn't get to vote on that because of some other reasons.
Got it. No, well, thank you for sharing that. No, thank you for sharing that. How about you, Tim?
There, I ran on bringing forward a climate change action plan. Like, we've got to get ready for climate change. And when I come, you know, now being on council, I realize there's so many other issues that have to be addressed before getting to that point. I don't know how I would have described my intent differently without sounding it's not committed. Mm-hmm. I'm still committed to it, but there's so many bits and pieces that are going to come before that, that I have seeded pieces of my platform, you know, into my work, mm-hmm. but haven't actually been able to act on them yet. And a lot of, you know, there's lots of reasons for that. And the other piece that was really, and still really important to me, is this wave of unaffordable housing. And, you know, attainable and affordable housing, I still have visions that it's going to take place, but it's such a challenge that I don't know that there's any votes that I've made that I would change. I know that there were some votes that there was one in particular where I deviated from the rest of council because, and it, I just thought, I have got to stand on this. Mm-hmm. Even though I can't, they can't legally work because of the process, mm-hmm. But I can't vote for this. It's one more thing that I don't understand, which, and over time I've learned, like, oh yeah, there's a reason why you can't vote against that. And I did. So I think I would still vote against it, even though I know it probably wouldn't be the thing, right? You know, I don't know. That's one of the things I still question. Mm-hmm. I would do if I would vote for that, but I feel like even though it was a questionable, you know, a questionable vote, I opposed something that had already been voted on once. It was a second reading, and I was like, no, and they were like, you can't. I was like, I just did. So you know, I haven't gotten to the point where I've made a vote where I was like, God, that was absolutely the wrong one to make based on who I am and what I represent. So far, so good.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, Shakita, I mean, you're newly elected, so I still want to ask the question, but I was going to say it may be too soon. And you can tell me if it is.
Actually, it's so good to hear Tim and Junie express, you know, their experience, so I can kind of think, you know, before I make, which I should do anyway, which I am. But my first night, my first session, I actually made a motion back to what Junie was talking about, how city council time is not equitable. And so I made a motion to decrease the days of our meetings. And in our charter, we only have to meet twice a month, but we're meeting every Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And so for people who work every day throughout the day, that's really hard and challenging. So I made a motion. And so anyway, right now we're going, starting 2022, we'll be starting 3 days out of the month. Mm-hmm. So 3 Tuesdays instead of 4, we're going to try it out. And maybe, who knows? We'll see how that goes. But I've noticed also that when I didn't second a motion on something that I ran on, somebody's texting me, calling me, like, you didn't second that motion. You didn't do, I was like, wait, what? I'm still, they had like 2 or 3 amendments. I'm still trying to catch up, hit the button, and you know. So I'm still learning. I'm still waiting to see if somebody gonna call another amendment on the first, like after the second amendment. And next thing you know, somebody swoop in and make us, so people are watching and making sure we are under a microscope.
Yeah, and you're making that clear in your remarks right now, because I thought, my gosh, you know, people are really carefully watching each and every one of you.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, Junie, notwithstanding the remarks you made a little while ago about you feeling that, at least in the city of Boulder, that class looms large, as it does. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I think many people might disagree with you, though, on this issue that somehow class eclipses race. I think when we look at these intersections of class and race, and when we look at the intersections of gender identity, and again, you know, we really expand this notion of what we're talking about and who we're talking about. I wanted to reference kind of the incidents that have occurred, say, in this kind of 2019-2021 period. So if we look back, for example, we have Zayd Atkinson. Okay. And just for those who may be tuning in and not familiar with that, Zayd Atkinson, who was Black, was accosted by then Officer John Smiley, who was white. And this all unfolded in March of 2019. And Atkinson, Zayd Atkinson, claimed he was racially profiled by the officer. And as we know, Officer Smiley alleged that he felt threatened by Zayd Atkinson, who was picking up trash in front of his residence in the city of Boulder. He was using a bucket and a trash grabber to do that. And this resulted in a whole host of issues and conversations. But to say that the situation escalated is to, in many ways, perhaps kind of soft pedal what occurred, but it did escalate. And it resulted in Officer Smiley drawing his stun gun and then his handgun on Zayd Atkinson, who was then a student attending Naropa University. There was another incident that occurred in October of 2019, and this occurred on the CU Boulder campus. In the engineering building. And there was a video posted to social media, which showed a white woman making racist comments towards several Black students who were actually in the engineering building. It was learned that she was not affiliated with CU Boulder. She had been seen camping on the campus months before that. But after the engineering building incident, a car on the hill was vandalized with a racial slur. So if we come up to 2020, and this is by no means exhaustive. I'm just highlighting some of the incidences that have occurred during this period. So in 2020, CU's Office of Institutional Equity and Compliance investigated more than 50 race-based incidents in a 5-week period. And as I said, we don't have enough time to comb through every racist, anti-Black, transphobic, anti-LGBTQ, and Islamophobic incident that has occurred in the city of Boulder and or Boulder County. However, I believe that if I have this right, It was the morning of the 23rd of September of this year that several business owners in Longmont discovered flyers left on their doorsteps. And these flyers included the N-word and the statement that people of color are not worthy. The flyers fall under the umbrella, I get it, you know, the protection of free speech. But those provisions don't mitigate the harm caused by the words on the flyers and the experiences that people of color living in Longmont and, again, adjoining cities had or their response to that. So for all of you, I mean, coming into office and looking at some of those incidences, how did they affect you or perhaps continue to affect you as a council member, if they did? And so, Tim, I'll start with you.
The incidences are fresh. They never go away. Mm-hmm. And I use that reality to build cases in everywhere it's applicable in discussion, wherein something that we do in the city may put a population in a vulnerable situation. For example, when it came to knocking on doors, I told the other counselors, other people running, I was like, I'm not comfortable knocking on anybody's door. I can't walk up to somebody's house. Mm-hmm. And they looked at me like they didn't get it at first. And I was like, I'm not comfortable that I'm going to get to the front door and then get away from the front door and have a successful experience that leads to, you know, is a reasonable expectation that I can do that. And being the first African-American on the city council in Lafayette doesn't mean that people are in Lafayette have a problem with African-Americans. That's not the connection. There's a whole history of reasons why I shouldn't feel safe. And any, it's called a microaggression or just straight up aggression, any of those actions create a hostile, maybe too strong of a word, maybe it's not, but it creates an environment where there are people who question whether or not it's safe for them. For African-Americans, I had to come to some understanding of my relationship with police in order to be able to represent the needs of the police, but at the same time, the African-American community. Mm-hmm. So when my approach is to, when possible, report out and describe the need for alliance that doesn't come from a person of color or a Black person. There are people who are in the majority who need to be those allies. And I do what I can to describe why it's very important for Black people to stick up for themselves, you know, to hold their ground, stand their ground. But it's incredibly important, and I'm not going to try to equate which one has more weight, but we need the broader majority community to put on the brakes and dig in and say, absolutely not, because these incidents happen over and over again, and maybe they're subtle, maybe they're not. So my approach is to speak to people who just don't understand why it's an issue and say, like, it's systemic, it's part of the culture, and that culture needs to change. And the way to do that is for people who are in the majority need to talk to each other. And I had a constituent who is, she said, there's nobody whiter than me. She's just very, light colored, light coloring. Mm-hmm. And she had to explain to a friend of hers who has children that are Black, adopted, mm-hmm. that are Black. She's white. She has an adopted Black child. And she said, let me make this perfectly clear. You have got to provide a safe environment for your Black child. That's a thing. You have to do this. You know, and this is a white person talking to another white person about providing a safe space for their Black child. Nurturing that child's one thing, but you've got to understand that their experiences, due to no fault of their own, needs to be watched. And you may need to be supportive of that.
Okay. So everyone, you are listening to Black Talk on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. And we're going to continue our conversation with Tim Barnes, Shakita Yarbrough, and Junie Joseph. So Junie, I wanted to ask you that same question because you were coming into office, I believe, during several of these incidents. And how did they affect you as a council member, if they did?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking this question. And I don't want to take away from what we're fighting for, especially as a person of color, because, you know, I don't want to be one of those people of color who say racism doesn't exist or prejudices doesn't exist. So I understand that. So when I say that in Boulder, we have an issue with class, it's because I want to advocate for every person, regardless of color, race. But nonetheless, as a person of color, I understand that racism is prevalent in our society, in our community, and I don't want to take away from that. And if anyone think that's what I said before, that was not my intention, and I'm deeply sorry about that. But we do, again, have issues with, you know, why is Boulder so white? And that's another thing that I've talked about when I was running, is that there is no sign that says, as a person of color, you cannot live here in Boulder. But we know that because of income, people are excluded from living in Boulder. So that's what I meant by that. But I do know that also there are, even though it's income that precludes people of color from living in Boulder, we also have environmental issues that we can work on that impacts people of color, as Tim mentions, right? And also, as you mentioned, the different, you know, the different times that Black people have been negatively impacted just by walking around Boulder. I am fully aware of that. You just mentioned some of the things that happened. You know, I, as a Black person as well, I have experienced microaggression, and I continue to experience microaggression, even though I've been a city council member and I've been a mayor pro tem, I've experienced that. So I won't say that racism doesn't exist, but I still want to be that person who walk in the world and give people the opportunity to make things right, right? So I don't hold that against my entire community. I've had people message me and call me a token Black person that I've been elected because, you know, they wanted to give this token a place. And I've had white people say that to my face when I was running. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I have experienced things that, mm-hmm. you know, that I've had someone ask me before, how do I feel about microaggression? And I would have to say, if I were thinking about racism and microaggression each and every day, I would never roll out of bed. I would just stay in bed, even though I've been a city council member, even though I've been mayor pro tem of Boulder. So these are the things that I still experience. And if I experience these things, I know other people experience them as well. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's, and I think part of the question as well is, how do we move forward as a community? How do we move forward knowing that we still have this nuance thing, right? This nuance where you live in this community, you're part of it, but you're still experiencing things that make you feel that you're not part of the community, right? Every time I get an email from someone, I've had an email where a community member called me a token. Then she said to me, well, I didn't call you a token because you're Black. I call you a token because you're Haitian. And I thought, well, isn't that the same thing actually? Because being Haitian, being Black, it's still, you know, it's still just not a way of bringing people in together. So calling me names because of my nationality is not helpful, even mm-hmm. though you may not be calling me names because I'm of the color of my skin. So in a way, what I want to say is that I still want to give people space, and I still want to bring people in, and I still want to do the work, even in myself, right? The action of one person in the community is not the action of all people in the community. So I think my role as being a city council member is, how do I create, or at least in my own way, with everything that I'm experiencing and everything that I know my friends and other people of color are experiencing in the community, how do we make the community better? Mm-hmm. For instance, I know the NAACP is doing great work in the community, and it goes back to what Tim says. How do we create these environments? The NAACP, the Executive Committee for African American Cultural Events, they put in on projects, they put on events. I was part of the Juneteenth event to educate our population, right? The white population about Black culture and Black community, and also create a space where we all can come together, whether you're Black, white. So I think yes, in 2021, we're still experiencing some form of racism. We're still experiencing microaggression and passive aggression and aggression from certain people, right? Or certain white people or other cultures. But at the end of the day, we're working at it. And I think that's the most important. If every day we wake up, we can say, no matter how I feel or that one person make me feel, I'm here to make the community better for the next group of young Black people who are coming into Boulder, whether you're coming here for an education at CU, and then you say, well, you know what? From what I see on the outside, this may not have been my place, but because Junie Joseph had been through Boulder, she made this place somewhat better for me, and it educates some of the other white people with, you know, with the help of the NAACP, with the help of, you know, the ECACE, which is, you know, as I mentioned, the Executive Committee for African American Cultural Events. So I just think that we have to continuously work together, work on ourselves and work with each other to really make a difference. But again, systemic racism has been around for a very long time. It's going to take a very, very, it might even take much longer for us to rid ourselves of our past. So we have to be patient with one another as well.
No, thank you for that, Junie. So Shakita, although you weren't in office yet, you were living in the community. How were you affected by these incidents, if you were? And I guess the second piece of that before you begin, that occurs to me that I think is as important. Were you influenced to run for the Longmont City Council due to any of these incidences?
Absolutely. One of the reasons why I was influenced to run, because there wasn't or isn't, now there's representation, and representation matters. And I'm so grateful for Tim paving that way and Junie being that example in Boulder. And so I'm hoping to follow them. And when I grow up, I want to be like them. And, you know, it is everything that Tim said, making sure that our community is aware of, you know, these issues. And like Junie said, it's important moving forward in communication, communicating with our community and letting them know that the past is the past, but how are we going to move forward and work together on these issues and bring awareness that yes, it's still here. Yes, it's still here. So how can we as a community tackle it bit by bit by bit? Because it won't happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a year. But informing our community and saying, when you see that child or you see a teenager, when you hear another adult displaying those microaggressions or saying something that's inappropriate, racially inappropriate to another community member, then you need to step in and say, that's not right. And that's not appropriate. That's not how we do it in Longmont. That's not how we do it in Boulder County. Right. Mm-hmm. So let's find out, you know, if I need to help you in some kind of way, do I need to provide a resource for you? Then let's do that. You know, not, you know, displaying aggression towards that person because they themselves, we can't treat it with microaggression with another microaggression. We have to treat it with love and compassion and education. Mm-hmm. So I'm truly grateful to have the opportunity to be behind these two wonderful council members and learn from them. So yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you. So I want to stay on this just a little bit longer. I want to dig a little deeper. So as Black city council members in your respective Boulder County communities, do you feel that you do the emotional labor, that you do the emotional labor of bringing issues up and or answering questions and or allaying colleagues' fears or concerns when it comes to issues of race and the intersections of race, gender, class, and more? What do you think about that, Tim?
I do the work when it's in context because it is so complex. If you say that, you know, white people are racist against Black people, immediately someone's gonna tell you that that's just a part of what racism is. So in a discussion, I hope to be able to view the racist elements and point out that this makes other people, this makes an underserved population not just nervous or afraid. This is going to have a long-term impact on an entire population if we do this. Or in this situation where our police officers did something, you know, that hasn't come up, but if we had a situation where our police officers had done something, the question was whether or not it was racially, you know, is there any racial improprieties in there in the, you know, with the police, then I'm lucky that in our police department, I've had long talks with our chief of police about what exactly is your approach. And he's actually a Longmont native. So I'm like, okay, so you have a history, you have a background of what is, what it's like to be in East County, what it's like to be in Boulder Valley, and what's your approach? And he's like, you know what, we've got there's some training that has to happen. So in regards to the police, mm-hmm. you know, I feel comfortable, but when there's other things that come up, for example, which celebrations do we have? Which art do we have on display? Anything that would come up where there's a question of race, I'm not afraid to point out that there may be some vulnerabilities with Black people, Latinos, people of color, underserved populations. I'll say like, you know what, that's racist, or that's biased, or, you know, there might be a problem there. So, but I need to have it in context because every situation needs to be represented as accurately as possible before you say, like, this is the racist element in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, thank you for that. Clear. You know, Jeannie, I've got a question for you. In your respective constituency, so in Boulder City, who would you say holds the power? Who holds the power politically, economically, and otherwise? Because all of these things affect housing, and the answers to these questions affects housing, it affects education, it affects employment, it affects life in the city of Boulder. Who would you say holds power?
Oh my goodness, that's a great question. And I don't think there is a real answer to that question because, you know, different people can say it's different group. It's all depends on perspective, right? People can say, well, elected officials hold the political power. They have the political capital, you know, but I'm one of nine. There's eight other people as well who would say, well, I'm one of nine as well. So in a way, you know, power in politics is very fluid. And then you have the city manager because it's a council ultimately can make, you know, decision with the group of nine. We need five out of four out of nine to get any type of policy passed. And then you'll have people who say, well, it's the wealthy people, right? Those who are connected, those are the people who hold power. And I think I would somewhat agree to that because that's, you know, that was part of my campaign when I ran, because I get a sense that, you know, the people who are politically connected, the ones who come to council and speak, you know, on Tuesday night, they somehow can shift the narrative of any particular issue the way they want. And then those who are being affected or the marginalized are not being part of that discussion because they are unavailable. So in a way, those who are wealthy, who has the time to come to council to speak on the issues, the ones who can call me and say to me, hey, by the way, Junie, I'm waiting on an answer from you, because they have the education. That's real power. When you have the education and you know, you can call your council member and demand an answer, that's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. And or if one feels entitled to pick up the phone and call. Yeah, that can also change dynamics a bit. But I agree with you, you know, that all those factors do come into play. Shakita, you are in Longmont and you know this already, but some of our listeners may not. I've always loved the adage, the past is prologue. The KKK was such a powerful organization in Boulder County and at the state level at one point. There were KKK parades throughout the streets of Boulder. Many indigenous inhabitants were killed or forced to relocate by white occupiers. I mean, that's our history. And white residents of Boulder played a key role in the Sand Creek Massacre, which led to other conflicts, such as the Battle of Little Bighorn, and have said to have participated in the Wounded Knee Massacre as well. Think about discriminatory practices and policies Some of these policies and practices were really enshrined as part of the kind of political process, not only in Longmont, but again, throughout Boulder County. Again, when we think about the policies, the written and unwritten policies that exist, because I think sometimes the unwritten policies can be crucial and the ones that can bite. So how does that come up, or how would you like to see, if at all, that history kind of etched in the minds, not only of city council people, but also in the residents? And I'm asking you now, so we'll speak specifically of Longmont, because I wonder, does that come up? And Tim and Junie, you can chime in, because again, this is the history of Boulder County. I'm speaking of Longmont specifically because the KKK was so prevalent there. But how would you like to see, if at all, that raised or come up? Just again, the history, that whole idea of understanding our history so we can move forward. And how do we do that, given the past that many are really unfamiliar with?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I believe education, of course, you know, educating me, myself, understanding the system too, you know. So as Junie mentioned, you know, looking at all of those forces of power within the city, educating myself, you know, educating myself, those who are in power. So talking to, having those meetings with the city attorney, having those meetings with the directors within those city departments, and with the city manager, the chief of police, understanding when I see, you know, some policies come in front of me and I have no clue what that means or why this was passed, or, you know, asking, can I come in and make an amendment to that because this is not equitable for all people or all of our community members. And also having those discussions with those community members who use their power, which is their voices, that come to city council meetings every week and speak up, who will be at those development areas saying this is not right, who's at the fracking wells, who's saying, no, this is not going to happen. So talking to those community members to understand and teaching them and myself learning their way of thinking and looking at those policies and asking them, do you think that this was meant for all people? Do you think that this was meant for the entire community of the city of Longmont? And if it isn't, how can we change it? You know, because it's not just me walking in there or sitting there saying, no, this is not right. But we have to inform our community why it's not equitable, why it's not serving all people, you know. And I think that is when we can actually tackle the inequities of those policies that have been implemented before, you know, with the KKK, or, you know, that's systemically ingrained in this city. So I think that, you know, back to education, like Junie said, education, informing our community and being open to understanding, not saying that I agree with it, but being open to understanding, listening to my constituents and listening to talking with the community, our city manager, talking to our chief of police, talking to those directors of all the departments of the city and say, do you think that this was equitable? This, you know, these policies and these plans that you're putting in place, is that for the entire community, for the city of Longmont? That is how we're going to change. That is the only way we can do it.
And well, thank you. Got a question for all three of you. So speaking of education, if you were tasked with teaching a class for up and coming Black folks interested in local politics, running for city council seats in their respective majority white areas, what advice would you offer these prospective local politicians? What would you say, Junie?
Oh my goodness. if I was teaching a class, I would, based on my own experience of being on city council, I would say to, you know, this up and coming Black person or Black leader, I'd say you have to be patient, mm-hmm. right? You can't expect, again, as we mentioned, we can't expect environmental issues to be changed just because you show up, right? Because I think part of the frustration as well, you show up, you come with an open heart and an open mind, which I believe I did when I became a council member. And you expect change right away, but it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because, again, those issues that we face each and every day, they have their own power structure and it serves certain people as well, whether it's economically or politically and socially. So for you, the change that you want to see may not even take place, whether in during your tenure or even in your lifetime. But the fact that you're there, it's important. You're there expressing yourself, maybe little by little, you'll chip, you'll make some small break, but you may not necessarily break the system itself because a lot of people have been at it. And I have to remind myself every so often that I'm not that brilliant. I'm not the one who's gonna, you know, break the entire system. But here you are, you're part of it. You will inspire the next generation. Be there, be engaging, you know, and be patient because a lot of times what I've seen, I think it goes back to something that Shakita said. And I thought, oh my gosh, yeah, I have felt that even on council sometimes, you know, as the person of color, although I don't represent the entire race of Black people, but I've been Black all my life and I've been working class all my life. And sometimes my fellow council members want to speak on my behalf or on behalf of the other, you know, other Black people in a way that make it seem like they've been part of that community. And when I try to chime in, my thought or what I'm trying to express is not being taken in. And I have to remind them, hey, by the way, please make space, create space for me to engage you, to share that knowledge with you, because you may have read it in a book, but I've lived this lifestyle all my life. I've been part of the Black community all of my life. And I think I can share some insight with you. So I would say to an upcoming Black person, you know, within that sphere of working in predominantly white towns as a council member, is to be patient, be kind. And sometimes your patience will wear out, but just, you know, work at it. Pray on it if you must, which I have, and keep doing the work, because the work is not just for them, because a lot of times we think we're trying to help somebody else when really we're working on ourselves. Because I would say being on council has made me so much more patient and so much more kinder as a human being. And I have to say, when I look in the mirror at the person who I am and I set aside the title of being a city council member, I like the person I see in that mirror. And I think council has helped me in that. So I would say, yeah, do the work, be there, be present, even when it is frustrating.
Well, thank you. So Professor Barnes, what would you do in your classroom? What would you be teaching?
I would, thank you so much. I would stress the importance of the concept of being on a council versus the individual. I think many times we uphold this hero, this savior, this single person that's going to make an impact. And the reality is a society functions as a group, and the council is a group where we have a single voice, which means you have to work with the other members of your council in order to have an impact. If you want to see that change, if you want to get all the way to the top of the mountain, and then look over, you're going with all your friends. And I intentionally say friends. And I mean friends in the sense of these are people who hopefully have the same passion as you. They want to see a well-functioning community and society and understand that the council works as one. If you are, and hopefully at some point there will be more than one Black person on a city council in Boulder Valley, and if you're that one, everything that Junie said, you can't speak for everyone, but you do have authentic experience that needs to be brought to the table. And asking for space to provide your input is critical for the council that's seated there and for the city to understand that and listening, I think, breeds listening. If you truly hear your fellow council members and create a message that they can understand, get it in the record, because once it's written, then you have you have started to build that topsoil that the next Black person can then stand on and say, hey, do you remember this other bit and piece? Well, there's also this. And we will get there, but we're building a community and society.
Yeah, thank you so much. How about you, Shakita? What are your thoughts about that in terms of teaching that class?
Well, since I'm the newbie, this is some of the things I just wrote. I mean, I wrote down some things real quick. First of all, remember what your purpose is, right? The purpose of why you are running. And then also, it's so important that I think a lot of government officials forget to hold themselves accountable. You know, you got to be ready for anything. Don't have expectations. Always be yourself, because that's who God made you to be. Won't work to try to mold into something else. It just won't make it. I think number one, this should have been number one, is educate yourself. Educate yourself on the policies, the rules and regulations, and everything that you can. It's a lot of work, but educate yourself. And then last but not least, allow time for self-care. It's important. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Thank you. And often forgotten. All right, folks. So Jenny Joseph, Boulder City Council, Shakita Yarbrough, Longmont City Council, and Tim Barnes, Lafayette City Council, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me. And folks, you've been listening to Black Talk, KGNU 88.5, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Thank you. And we will see you, and you will hear us next time.
There's been so many things that's held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting our show together, we're polishing up our act. And if you've ever been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down.